The BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the program and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and those taking part are Anne Scott James, Dilys Powell, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norton. Round one tries to test their vocabulary. 2 marks if they get the meaning of these words right. And we begin with Dilys Powell. Dilys, I want to know the meaning of the word acardiac. A-C-A-R-D-I-A-C, acardiac.
It ought to mean without a heart.
It means exactly that. Without a heart. It's not an emotional term, it's a physiological one. I mean, if you're born without a heart, you don't last very long.
Of course.
2 marks it is.
But it's fun while it lasts.
Yes. Now, Dennis Norton. Dennis, what is chow chow? C-H-O-W with a hyphen and another one.
Chow chow. Well, it sounds like two Italians saying goodbye. It's what you get in Chinese restaurants. I don't know what it is, because I never get that far. Of course, you get hungry an hour afterwards, but I never get as far. It's one
you
of
just read
desserts.
The menu and walk out.
Yeah. It's in the dessert part of it.
Yes. It's made normally of orange and ginger, and ginger happens quite a lot, I think, in Chinese restaurants. And that's it. Anne Scott James, what is a zingaro? Z-I-N-G-A-R-O.
Oh, that's another exotic word. It's a gypsy.
Quite right. And when it happens in the plural and plays cricket?
Izingari.
Thank you very much indeed. 2 marks. It's Italian for a gypsy, and this wandering cricket club, the gypsies, call themselves Izingari. Frank Muir, what is variolation? V-A-R-I-O-L-A-T-I-O-N. Variolation.
I'll tell you what it is. It's a rotten word. It's a rottenest word I've heard for quite a few weeks, actually. And I thank you for it. Variolation. Ation is the sort of process of something happening.
Yeah.
Like, ovation is a process of laying eggs.
You have to have a syllable there.
Variolation is golf. It's knocking a ball into various holes.
Would it variolation? Would it help, Frank, if I said
no.
Variola? Does that help?
Spottedness, as in variegated,
yes.
Privet.
Yeah? You see, you're getting much better, yes.
Well, appertaining to things spotty. Present
right.
Company, etc.
Half a mark. Well, not very close, we'll give you half a mark. Variolation is inoculation with smallpox virus, variola being the name for smallpox, just like rubella is the name for German measles. Well, before we begin round two, I'm going to give each team a quotation for them to write down, and the two women members of the team will, I hope, go on studying their quotations. And then at the end of the program, I shall ask them for the source of the quotations. So, Dilys Powell and Frank Muir, yours is, I am monarch of all I survey. And Anne Scott James and Dennis, yours is, ne'er cast a clout till may be out. And at the end of the program, I shall ask Frank and Dennis to give me their ideas of how these phrases came to be said or written. And so on to round two, which is, I think, a pretty easy round about nursery rhymes. 2 marks, if you get them right. Dilys Powell, what were the names of the two little dicky birds who sat upon the wall?
Peter and Paul.
Absolutely right.
Huh.
Two little dicky birds sat upon a wall, one named Peter, one named Paul, and it finishes up, fly away, Peter, fly away, Paul, come back, Peter, come back, Paul. I used to play with ink stains on my nails, like a sort of rather exotic nail varnish.
Interesting. No, you play it with a little bit of paper stuck on the end of your finger with spit. And,
We do that.
We're both passé. It's no good, Frank. They play it with skipping ropes now. So my daughter tells me.
You can't play it with...
They play with drugs now.
It's probable.
Fibers, yeah. A bit torn off a £5 note.
All right, back to Dennis Norden. Who agreed to make the shroud for Cock Robin on his death?
Well, this could have been Paul. Right?
No. Wait a minute. No, I haven't got the illusion.
I'm being very elusive.
You are, terribly. Beaten me, it
was
Paul
a,
ends up.
It was a beetle.
Oh, yes. Well done. Absolutely.
As I said the beetle with my thread and needle. Yay, yay.
Yes, I wish I'd give you a bonus mark. It's jolly good. Two marks. Who'll make the shroud? I said the beetle with my thread and needle. I'll make the shroud. And all the birds of the air fell a-sighing and a-sobbing. Anne Scott James. Who was it who went to bed with his trousers on and with one shoe off and one shoe on?
My son John.
Mm-hmm. He said other things, too. Do you remember them?
Diddle, diddle, dump.
Think yes. My son John went to bed with his trousers on.
That's all right. Good enough. Enough. Two marks. Diddle, diddle, dumpling, my son John went to bed with his trousers on. There is a... In Mother Goose, it's stockings, but it's trousers, I think, is more usual or unusual. Mm. One shoe off and one shoe on. Diddle, diddle, dumpling, my son John. Now back to Frank Muir. Old Mother Hubbard went to the cupboard to fetch her poor dog a bone. And as you know, the cupboard... No, I don't want the next bit. And as you, and as you know, the cupboard was bare. She then went to various places in order to get food and drink. And each time she got back, the dog was doing something different. And this is a bit...
We know what dogs are, don't we? She probably gave him water at one stage.
No. This is the bit I want.
What do you want, Jack? Come on, out with it, man.
She took a clean dish to get him some tripe. And what happened when she came back? She took a clean dish to get him some tripe.
That's easy. He was smoking a pipe.
Well, don't silly,
he was. He was smoking a pipe.
Oh, stick to that.
He was smoking a pipe.
When she came back, he was smoking a pipe. Two marks. So then we have a round about origins and derivations. Three marks as a maximum. If the team can define the present meaning and then tell me the origin and derivation of these words or phrases. Lewis Powell, pronto.
Pronto?
Hmm.
Origin?
I know this.
What it means that...
I can help you.
Go on. Hazard a guess. Yeah, go on.
We think it's Spanish.
Yes.
For quick.
Yes. Just there.
And bistro is Russian for quick. And you just used that, presumably via Mexico into America.
Yes, and how to hear to this country?
Well, via Wild West Films, I think.
I think as near as anything, yes. Mm. All right, that's three. Slang, meaning quickly at once or get a move on, like Italian subito, which means the waiter will come within the next half hour. And it is a Spanish or Mexican word. It came through Westerns and I think through Americans in the last two wars. Over here. Dennis Norden. Quagmire. Quagmire. Quagmire.
Well, it's a sort of swamp or marsh.
Yes. And originally?
Originally it was a sort of swamp.
No,
it wasn't porridge or anything like that. Well, it may have been. Mire is mud.
Yes.
And quag is the noise that your shoe makes when you take it out of a swamp. You quack.
Quag. Oh, I think it's the noise a frog makes.
Or a frog in there. it's good.
Quack,
yes.
Quack.
Quack, quack, quack.
I think you're on the wrong tag.
It's frog mud.
I think this describes not sound, but what actually happens. Not in question of sound.
Quag is a Spanish to sink into. Quagare. To sink in.
Dennis, when you step on it, what's the first feeling that you get?
Revulsion.
I was trying so
hard to help. You?
A marshy or boggy stretch of land, but what it really means is a quaking bog. And quagmire originally was quakemire. It meant that when you started stepping on it, you get terribly frightened because it starts shivering under your feet. Land that quaked and trembled underfoot because it had no foundation but mud or bog. One half. Anne Scott James, agnostic.
An agnostic means now somebody who doesn't know. It's usually a religious used of religion.
Yes.
Somebody who says that they do not know if there is a God or isn't a God.
Yes. And comes from, and who used it first?
Well, it's a Greek word. How far back do the agnostics go? They go back to Socrates, I should think.
The word does, but I think the description of the chaps is very, very much more recent.
Much later. What's a Christian word?
Two out of three for knowing it's Greek and for knowing what it means now. Someone who argues that as there is no material phenomenon to prove that there is a God or a life after death, they reserve judgment on the matter because they don't know. And agnostos means sort of not known. That's the Greek original. But it was coined in respect of religious doubt by Huxley, Professor Huxley, in 1869, to describe this particular mental attitude of people who find it difficult to believe implicitly in things that couldn't be proved physically and materially. And it probably harks back to that bit in the New Testament of St. Paul, the altar to the unknown God. Agnostic. Frank Muir. In the gods. Or up in the gods, if you like.
In the gods means being in the upperest of the upper gallery in a theatre.
And why?
Because when that kind of theatre, music hall theatres, were first built in the Victorian times, they were always liberally decorated with cherubs and deities.
Absolutely right.
In gilt and blue and plush.
Wonderful. The top gallery of the theatre, and these used particularly at Drury Lane, were to be embellished with paintings and carvings of various gods, and therefore the people at the top were nearest among the gods. And the French had a similar expression, describing it as paradis, as in the film Les Enfants de Paradis.
Is the pit the opposite of the gods, then?
I've always assumed, sir, unless it's something like the bear pit, you see, when you were bull baiting,
yes,
the bear baiting.
Yes, probably was. Mm.
Well, I don't know how to describe this round, but everybody knows that the wife of a prince is a princess, normally, and of a duke a duchess. I want to know the title of the wives of the following people. Two marks. Phyllis Powell, an earl.
Countess.
Countess it is. She could also be the wife of a count, but we don't have that as a title in this country. Two marks. Dennis Norden, a marquess or marquis.
Marchioness.
Yes. Anne Scott James, a baronet. Wife of?
She's a lady.
Normally. Yes, she used to be called Dame. That was an alternative title. Dame with her Christian name, Dame Mary so-and-so, but normally now Lady. And this is nice because this is the lowest hereditary titled order, and it was entirely started in order to raise money by James I. For £1,000 down, you could become a baronet. Nowadays, we don't do it in quite such a vulgar way. And Frank Muir, Maharaja.
Maharaja. Maharani.
Yes, quite right. The wife of a Maharaja is a Maharani. The Maharaja is a great king, and a Maharani is a great queen. Hindustani. Well, the next round's about George Bernard Shaw. And he wrote a good many epigrams and witticisms in his time, sometimes on very controversial topics. And I want to know to what he was referring when he made the following comments. Two marks again, if you get it right. Beginning with Dillis Power. It is popular because it combines the maximum of temptation with the maximum of opportunity.
Marriage.
Yes, quite right. You get two marks. Marriage is popular because it combines the maximum of temptation with the maximum of opportunity. Dennis Norden. It ends in logical completeness when nobody is allowed to read any books except the books that nobody can read.
Well, I just think it's some form of censoring books.
Yes, that's it. Censorship. Just one word for it.
Censorship.
Quite right. Censorship ends in logical completeness when nobody is allowed to read any books except the books that nobody can read. Two marks. He also said assassination is the extreme form of censorship. That's in a different bit. Anne Scott James, it is always wrong. It never solves a problem without creating 10 more.
Ministry of Transport.
Yeah. Wrong ministry.
Science.
Yes, science.
You actually derived it. 2 marks. Frank Muir, it's a wonderful thing. What a crime to waste it on children.
Television.
Quality.
Patience.
Is it being young?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh,
one word again.
Youth.
Absolutely right. Youth is a wonderful thing. What a crime to waste it on children. 2 marks. Everybody scored 4 marks in that round. Johnny Good. And now we come to the last round and go back to those 2 quotations I gave the teams earlier in the program. For 2 marks, Dillis Powell, can you give me the origin of your quotation? I am monarch of all I survey.
It's a poem.
Yes.
Which is supposed to be about Alexander Selkirk.
Yes.
Who was the origin of Robinson Crusoe.
Mm-hmm. Written by?
Somebody like Cooper.
Yes, quite right. You get it. 2 marks. I'm monarch of all I survey. My right there is none to dispute. And lines attributed or supposed to be written by Alexander Selkirk, chap who was wrecked on Desert Island, from whom the story of Robinson Crusoe was taken, but actually written by William Cooper. But it ended up rather more sadly. Better dwell in the midst of alarms than reign in this horrible place. He didn't really like his island. Anne Scott James, the origin of your quotation, ne'er cast clout till may be out.
Well, these smug little couplets are usually proverbs. I think it's just a proverb.
Traced, I think, originally to one country, though obviously copied in others, to the proverb.
Well, clout is a tremendously English,
yes,
Anglo-Saxon
is
word, isn't
yes.
it?
Proverbial, yes. 1.5, I think. What I was trying to get out of you was that, as far as we know, it first started in Spain in 1627, Correas. Don't leave off your coat till May, putting it quite straightforwardly. And then it comes in Fuller's collection of proverbs in 1732, leave not off a clout till May be out. And it doesn't occur in its present form, ne'er cast a clout till May be out, until the 19th century. Well, now I'm going to ask Frank and Dennis to give me their explanations of how these quotations came into being. And on this occasion, the marks will go to whichever incredible explanation receives the longer amount of applause from the audience here in the theatre. So, back to Frank Muir with his quotation, I am monarch of all I survey.
Recently, it suddenly borne upon me that the old juices aren't working as well as they should. The fact is, I had a dreadful warning. I had an intimation of mortality the other day. Suddenly, sitting by the side of the bed, and suddenly I couldn't get up. I had a terrible burning pain in my left breast. Actually, what had happened was I was thinking of something else, and I'd attached my left part of my braces, which has a clip end, to the top of my left sock. This, of course, stretched the elastic, which was rather old anyway, and was sort of wrinkled. But then that I released it, and the elastic contracted. It closed in. You know those two brown pimples we chaps have? I don't know quite their purpose. I use mine for steadying an ashtray when I'm smoking in bed, but the closing up of the elastic had trapped my little left pimple, and that was the pain. But it did cause me to wonder, really, how much longer I got to go. And I began to worry, and I suddenly realised it was time. I have possibly 40 or 50 years only ahead of me, and it was borne upon me that it's time I set my house in order. And there's one or two rather disgraceful things I've been guilty of in the past, and I'd like to tell you about them and get them off my conscience. The team have been receiving letters from famous people recently, the last few weeks. Dennis Norden has been receiving some from Val Parnell, saying, Dear Den, smashing show, lovely boy, lovely, but if I were you, I'd let Frank Muir win a bit more. It'll gain you sympathy, and as we in show business know, sympathy is a great thing for a great comic like you to have. Yours with love, Val. Anne Scott James received a number of letters from Monica Furlong, who is a sister journalist. The letters have said that, dear Anne, love your show, but if you'll just take a tip from me, and I do hear it quite a lot, don't get them all right. Let Frank Muir get a few right. It'll make you look soft and feminine. Yours, I, Monica. And Jack Longland's been receiving letters from Professor Asa Briggs, the lecturer and historian on broadcasting. Dear Jacko, love your show. Keep it up, son. But if I might make a suggestion, give Frank Muir easier words. This will gain you sympathy. Yours ever, your old pal, Asa. Dillis Powell has been receiving letters from Faye Compton. Dear Dillis, as a leading lady, take an advice from me and let the man win. Don't prompt him audibly. Let him have the impression that he's the one who's getting the answers. Yours, I, Faye. Ladies and gentlemen of the team, they didn't write to you, Monica and Val and Asa and Faye. No, I am not only Hugh, I am, in the words of Alexander Selkirk, I am Monica, Val, Asa, Faye.
Right, back to Dennis Norden and his quotation. Ne'er cast a clout till May be out.
If you can cast your mind back to when this was first propounded, they said it came from the Spanish. Do you remember? The chap said it came from the Spanish. The chap's got all the answers in front of him. Which is ridiculous, because May in Spain is marvellous. Mm-hmm. You can walk about with your cuff links off. So obviously, when they say about whichever of the two have the more incredible explanation, you know, and so, I mean, is there anything more incredible than that explanation? Obviously, that proverb did not come from the Spanish. Neither, I venture to submit, did it come from the English. Because, see, what it says is, ne'er cast a clout till May is out. It says, in effect, don't leave off winter underclothing till the 1st of June. Now, anybody who's lived for any length of time in this sceptred isle knows that will bring only one result. Pneumonia on the second. I'm right. Am I not right as thinking men and women? Obviously, if you are an Englishman, you daren't even leave off your earmuffs until about August. And it is possible that this proverb did in fact come from the French, who did place the time of leaving off, déshabillé in French, you know, dishabille in English, until August. The original, you see, the word for August in French is A-O-U-T. Oh. You know, as Mark Twain said, the foreigners always spell better than they pronounce. So that this proverb could have come from the French. They say, don't leave your clothes off till August, or ne'er cast des clouds till maybe how? You know. But that's only a theory and not one that I subscribe to. There's a body of opinion who says that it comes from Finland, actually, which would mean that it was finished before it started. But my particular belief is that it comes from the German. And it comes from a legendary German folk figure called Till Eulenspiegel. Till Eulenspiegel was a peasant round about the 14th century who played merry pranks and japes, which even if you read them today, you could absolutely die from boredom at them. And this So the legend has it, one day this merry prankster was out, and there happened to be a German Hausfrau called Alice Wunderland, who was doing the washing up at the window. Well, they wasn't up as the Winden. I won't translate everything as I go along, it's a bit tedious. And she threw out of the window her wet dishcloth, or clout. And as Till Eulenspiegel happened to be passing, it hit him right in the Augenhöhlen. Which, of course, I obviously don't need to translate. And he resolved, in revenge, to play a merry prank upon her, which he did, and the merry prank involved casting her mother naked into a vat of boiling sauerkraut. And this gave rise to two very popular German proverbs. The first one is Alles ist kaputt. And the other one is the injunction which all German housewives heed to this day, ne'er cast a clout till may be out.
Well, the result of the story contest is that Frank Miller just wins from Dennis, and that brings us to a final score in which Dennis Powell and Frank Muir get home by 5 marks from Anne Scott James and Dennis Norden. And that also brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dillis Powell, Anne Scott James, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland. The program was devised by Tony Schreien and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC.